Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to say good evening to everyone, good afternoon, and welcome to Missing Pages of History as your host, Lee Robinson. We're going to be talking today about what's going on in the neck of your woods and the world. And as usual, we have our analysts and our contributors of Missing Pages of History who will be giving their perspectives on what's going on in the neck of their woods, as well as we'd like to have your perspective today, what's going on in the neck of your woods. We think this is critical for us to begin to start discussing how can we get a collective understanding of the very issues that are affecting our communities from a collective perspective, so we can be in a better position to aid and to assist one another. As we move forward, we'd like to bring on our contributors again and our analysts from Mr. Pages of History. We have Emmanuel Joyner, Susan Robinson, June, and Michael McLean. They will welcome everyone today again to Mr. Pages of History. And what we want to do, to let our listening audience know, we would like for you to call in within the next 10 minutes at 818-337-0016. 818-337-0016. And we call in, you'll be acknowledged by your last four number. And make sure you hit button number one so you show up on our switchboard. So on that note, we'd like to start out with our contributor and our analyst, Mr. Joyner. We'd like to again welcome you back, and we'd like to have your overall assessment in terms of North Carolina, what's going on in the neck of your woods and your world. Mr. Joyner.
Good afternoon. I'd like to talk about voter ID. That's what's going on in the neck of my woods at the moment. We are trying to get a head start on this. And I'm offering suggestions, things that we need to do. And we need to, my agenda was first we need to go to the masses where the masses meet. And that was basically churches. That was basically the senior class, people who are turning 18 years of age in the senior high schools, and also to the universities and colleges, also the two-year institutions also. And also the masses, again, where they meet organizations, this type of thing, AARP, when they meet, we need to be speaking at these type of organizations also. NAACP, we need to be speaking at these organizations to execute the plan, because you're not going to stop. It's all local. It's statewide. And special states where the Republicans have the state legislature abounded and gagged and stupefied. So in this type of way, it's all along partisan lines. So you got to make sure, you got to start early in doing this. And that was my suggestion when I spoke at one of the churches. I got invited out to do that. And I told them what they had to do. And that's where your masses are. That's where mostly your voters are. And, of course, that's only for the other institutions of higher learning. And we have to do this. You can't wait too late to do this. We have to get a legal person, or most all churches have an attorney. We need to get the attorney involved to make sure everything is done correctly. We should also need to get the congressman or councilman or alderman in these local elections, get them to say, what are the guidelines, what plans do we have to make sure, you know, what we need to update, you know, for his driver's license, whatever ID you need to get. And I said to make sure that money is there, financial support is there, through the churches, take up a special collection just for people who are elderly or don't have, you know, financial funds. There's always ways to do something. Instead of being negative and disruptive and talking on the minimized side, we have to talk on the plus side, the maximum side, what we need to do. Let's maximize our efforts So if it's $25 or $30 for someone to get a birth certificate or to get a new ID or driver's license has changed from the name when you got married. Some people never change their driver's license. So we'll get married and got divorced and married again within a 5-year period or 10-year period for getting a driver's license. Some states update everything. Make sure that you qualify to vote. So all I'm saying is that this is my agenda. This is going to be my thing I'm going to do this year to make sure that I'll try to speak to as many churches as I can on Bible study night, whatever night it is, that I'll be allocated every church. And when they were doing their announcements, they always do announcements to make sure they talk about voter ID. That's very important. People need to get out and vote. So we got to use everything we can use to do that. And again, we have 148,000 predominantly black churches in this country, 148,000. So this is our math. This is where people go. So we need to do that. We got to make sure. And all our black universities, we got to make sure that this happened the way I'm talking about it. So, but this is my calling, and I'm going to do this.
Mr. Joyner, recently there was statewide elections that seem to be very important to the interests of the overall country. Some of the key states that were highlighted were Pennsylvania, Virginia, and North Carolina. Just give us a brief assessment of how did the election go in North Carolina and what are some of the things you learned from it?
Well, we didn't do a governor race. That was, I think the bigger races in Virginia and New York, they were the larger two. And also in New Jersey, they were the larger ones, you might say, also in Pennsylvania. But New York was very, very critical, and also Virginia. Most of the time in a presidential race, they said, Ohio was the state. Gee, if you win Ohio, you usually win the race. Well, you win Virginia, you usually win the race on the federal thing. So by taking Virginia, that was a calling call. That was a calling card I thought was outstanding, and so was New York. North Carolina, we already got our governor in, and most of the seats here were won by Democrats in certain areas. But again, the gerrymandering caused us problems here, and the Republican legislation is doing that. They sure they gerrymander, so what that means basically is putting a bunch of people, you might say, minorities in a sense, in one zip code. And you get one or two reps, and they take them where you have very small population, you might say Caucasians or Europeans, they take and get three or four reps there, so they have more reps in their legislature than they do, But regardless, this is what they're doing. So they get in areas that basically North Carolina, certain counties, they cut them up to a certain way to gerrymandering so they can get more reps and with less population. And they put all the minority population together. So you get, you don't get the same representation. But the Senate race is different because you get two senators while, so of course we're going to do that. But again, the rural areas versus the urban areas, that's what we have. And again, the race in Virginia, I thought was the most, let's say, calling card for the federal government, for the federal elections, and also for statewide elections coming up in 2014. Things should change dramatically and need to change dramatically. We need to get the obstructionists out of there. All of them. The Tea Party need to go. Unless we're going to start a coffee party. We need to start a coffee party like the Tea Party. But again, it takes finance. It takes money again. Once you minimize the finance, you're not going to win too much because you can't get out there. Word of mouth is not good enough. You need ads, advertisement. And it takes money to do that, and they charge you a lot for doing that, but that is the only way you're going to get it. You need media support, and that takes money. And New York guys, they got together, and they got it together, and they got it. That's the first Democratic mayor they had, I think, since 1980-something, and that is something different. And New Jersey, of course, with Chris Christie, he think he won about 60% of the vote, which is pretty decent. And he's a conservative. He's sort of a moderate Republican in a sense. Some of the things you do, I don't agree with at all. But again, when the Sandy came, he met with President Obama, and of course everybody was against that. And he did, Obama, he wanted federal money, like everybody else gets federal money. But they want to treat you like a stepchild. But he stepped up and said, you know, so this is about the people, not about me. So a lot of these individual people, Republicans, they're very individualist. And, of course, they're, on, you know, they're for themselves and no one else. They got, like I said again, they got their insurance. I was reading about what Ted Cruz's insurance is, $40,000 a year. Ted Cruz, but he don't want nobody to have insurance, but he got it. And most of the Congress, they have life insurance paid for by the taxpayers. So we don't talk enough. We don't educate our people enough. We pay for their insurance.
I'm going to stop you right there for right now. We're going to our next set of contributors, editors, out of Pennsylvania, affiliate, by the way, Philadelphia, Mikhail and June. We'd like to ask each of you what is going on in Nicaragua Woods, where you give our people an update. What is going on in Nicaragua Woods and y'all world? Mikhail.
Peace. It's good to talk to you guys again. This is Mikhail out of Philadelphia. And one of the most top topic in this area or in this neck of the woods are the elections and, of course, the school situation. Very low voter turnout, very, very low voter turnout, though Philadelphia did retain a lot of the African-American judges and so forth. However, the problem is that in this particular area, Philadelphia is already a Democratic city, and it has been for a very long time. However, we never get a chance to address the actual problems here, primarily because of the rest of the state is predominantly Republican, and that's a conflict right there. Generally, over the years here, the Republican, when we've had Republican governors, it's caused a division between this city, probably the largest city in the state, besides maybe Pittsburgh, and the rest of the state. The rest of the state is fairly rural. Their situation is very different, and they do not have a lot of love for Philadelphia itself. We have a large, they call a minority population, African-American, Hispanic, Asian, and the rest of the state is a little less diversified. Over in Jersey, I think maybe 2 million people came out to vote. I'm sure that's one of the reasons that Christie won. The problem, again, is that people have become generally very disheartened, very tired of the same things occurring again and again, and do not really participate in the local elections. They're quite attracted to hope and change and the various larger presidential elections, maybe the governor's race. But people have slept on the governor last time in Pennsylvania, Corbett, and have suffered for that. So there seems to be a problem of reawakening people and getting people to focus on what they can do in their local environment. A lot of folks I talk to in various parts of the country have just given up.
What we're going to do right now, we have a caller that's been waiting for a while. And we would like to have our listening audience to call in again and share their opinion on what is going on in Nicaragua Woods and the world. And we have a caller. Last phone number is 9289. Caller 9289. We'd like for you to give us your perspective of what's going on in the Nicaragua Woods, caller. Caller 9289. Welcome to Missing Pages of History. Are you there calling 9289? Hello, caller? Okay, we're going to come back to the caller. We have some technical difficulties. As we were saying earlier, we were talking about what's going on next in our wood. Mikhail, you mentioned something about the issue of the differences as relate to elections on maybe a state level versus one dealing with on a local level. And I think as we often listen to the news, we see there's a disconnect in terms of the turnout for the votes. The bigger the election is, the more people come out. But the smaller size of the election, the less people come out. But it's the small elections that really have an impact on the everyday lives of the people. I'd like for you maybe speak to, you were talking about earlier, that disconnect. What you think can be done between the state capital and the folks who allocate the resources for the state of Pennsylvania versus address the needs, particularly just for the people in area of Philadelphia, the city?
Well, Mr. Joyner had
that relationship.
Right. Well, Mr. Joyner had the right idea. When it comes to these elections, especially on the local level, there has been very little education as to their importance and how these particular positions affect you directly, whether it's your particular school system, your neighborhood, the judges that make decisions about where finances are being allocated or the laws that are affecting you directly. Here and in many cities, we've had stop and frisk. That's a hot topic, but nobody connects the dots so that people can figure out exactly how to address these situations on a legal level. And a lot of the folks I've spoken to, there's one fellow in particular, comes from rural Virginia. And what they're doing in some of the small towns is pretty much what you saw back in the day in movies like In the Heat of the Night. It's a system that's set up to benefit the ones at the top. You have in the court system in one place, you mentioned the prosecution and the defense attorneys. They are held by two companies in the area, and they revolve. So one year the defense is this particular company, and the next year they take on the prosecution's task. And the persons who are going through the system, whether it's for child support or even for minor criminal offenses, are just eaten up by that entire system. The system is generating money for the folks who work, the police, the judges, the lawyers, and because you're not educated about how this is really working and what your options are, you acquiesce and give up all your rights and are just filtered in and out of the system time and again. So people look at the people who are running the system, and they're generally of a similar complexion, and they ascribe it all to racism, but they never get to the mechanics of these systems and how they're supposed to work and how the voter is actually supposed to be able to affect that particular system. And I'm going to say that it's probably in the entire country. The education we received back in the day, we got civics classes, and that's been taken out of the school system. So the people are just there in general. Some are informed, but most aren't.
Okay, we're going to go to our caller. Caller been waiting for a while. Do we have a caller on the line? Do we have caller 3330?
I'm here.
Caller 3330.
Speaking.
Question or comment, please.
Okay, I'm going to give a comment. This is Brother Jabari, and I'm coming in from Richmond, Virginia. And what's going on in our neck of the woods is a carryover from the previous mayoral election, where our mayor was able to retain his seat, and the big issue that's being discussed is the building of a baseball stadium potentially in Charco Bottom, where the African burial grounds is located. So it's a big controversy and back and forth going on about that.
Now, what makes this African burial ground so special to that particular community, Jabari?
Well, it's the relationship it has to that particular community is that you're talking about recently discovered history. It was a history that was always there, but more attention was brought to it. So if a major event like a stadium being built there happened, you're talking about a history being erased, and given this point of time, it's so important that we preserve our history and teach those that don't know the story.
Okay, you bring up an interesting issue in that story, and I'd like to raise this issue with my contributors and analysts first. To Mr. Joyner, I'd like for you and then Mikhail, if y'all could speak to this question of insensitivity as it relates to the interests of African people or African-American people in this country. There seem to be behaviors, activities that are taking place and seem to be there's a lacking of respect, a lack of respect of not respecting African people as being human. For example, let's talk about some hot topics such as, Mr. Joyner, can you give me your analysis of this recent incident that took place with a football team named the Miami Dolphins, located in Miami, Florida, where there was an African football player. He was a football offensive lineman, and he seemed to be treated very unjustly in terms of towards another player, football player that's on the team, and some other football players, as relates to how they were treating him. Many people say he's being bullied. They're harassing for money. They're using racial terms against him and his family and his mothers. And what do you make out in terms of the messages that they are sending out with that kind of behavior and the behavior that is being displayed at one of the high schools that took place down in Florida also, I believe, where there was a young youth body that was killed in the gym, and they wrapped the body up in a rug or something. And when they found out that the body was in this rug, they also found out that there was no organs inside the individual, but nobody knew nothing about it. What is your analysis of these kind of activities as it affecting, you know, our community? And what kind of messages are they sending to people of African descent, Mr. Joyner? How do you respond to these kind of incidents?
Well, I don't think it's probably affecting the community as a whole. It affects the race of African-American people as a whole. The football player, what happened down in the Miami Dolphins, that was a locker room type thing, and they have this locker room when rookies come, but he's not a rookie. He's a second-year player. So this is totally unjust because he's a second-year player. Rookies come in, of course. They have to do certain things trying to curse some of the guys' bags or the captain bag, this or that. And sometimes they go on a little gambling junk, let's say maybe Las Vegas or whatever. If they're in that neighborhood going that way, they have a day off or a bye. They get days off and they go to Vegas. Now, this young man, they asked for $15,000 in money because he wasn't going, because he's not one of the guys. Well, he's not one of the guys because of certain reasons. First of all, his parents went to Harvard. He went to Stanford. 3.8 average. I mean, the guy's pretty sharp. So he's something like some people. That's like I went to the military. I didn't belong because I didn't smoke marijuana. I didn't drink. So I was not one of the guys, per se. I wasn't no different, but my parents taught me not to drink and not to smoke. There's 12 of us. Neither one of us, none of us drink or smoke. Well, that's just our character of us and my behavior from our parents. And this came from his parents the same way. So he just don't be with the guys. He's not going to strip clubs, things he just don't do. He don't drink, things he just don't do. He don't smoke pot or marijuana. He don't take different type of drink. He just don't do. So he's not one of the guys. Well, from talking rumors, they said one of the coaches said, toughen him up. Well, is that toughen him up going to Vegas, giving you $15,000? Of course, you're not going, so the guys can gamble with your money, and you're not going. So these kind of things happen. Of course, he addressed it, talked about his mother, talked about his sister. This guy has been a racial epithet for a long time, and they keep him around. Well, you know, they do this sometimes. They keep certain guys around that are agitators, and you've got a smart guy in the locker room. This is a different guy in the locker room. That probably should have stayed in the locker room, but I think it got out of hand. And they're going to cut care. This is going to be a story for quite some time here because this is totally wrong. You can't be calling people the N-word and calling them all kind of MF and everything else on the emails and everything else. So they got his language. So you can't back up from the language.
Mr. Joyner, can I stop you for a second and just get your honest opinion? If he was a Jewish athlete, and he used a real, real offensive word that Jews do not allow to be called, what kind of response do you think he would receive then versus how they have dealt with this now? Because some people are saying using the N-word, that's no big deal because we use it all the time. But if he was another ethnic group. Let's say you belong to so-called the Jewish community, and they use the word cunt or something. What kind of response do you think that young man would have received, and how do you think the media would have dealt with it?
Well, because the Jews basically own the media. So when you own the media, you're definitely going to be a different response when you own the media. You're Semitic, in a sense. So that's really going to be very, very negative toward him. And it'll be on all the airways, the headlines of newspapers and everything, because they own the media. So, yes, it'll be a different, because the ownership of the media, definitely be a different ballgame. But that's my response to that. They own the media. They own the newspaper. They own the Internet. They own all this stuff. So, yes, it's going to be a different one. And, again, when you were the last class, they called it, African America, the last class, every time you see us rated, you know, we're not number one or number two or number three or number four. We're always the last class. And that's because we were slaves. They're not going to never make you the first class. I mean, that's too facts here. That's an extension of slavery. Everything they do, that's an extension of slavery. Let's get that right. That's a fact. Police brutality, that is an extension of slavery. Prison sentences, extension of slavery. Minimum wage, extension of slavery. All this extension of slavery. They can take what you got and make some out of it. They take our inventions, they claim it for their own. Because you can't do mass production. And they can, because they own all of that. Now, coming back to the young man that got wrapped up in a mat at the gym, there are two autopsies on him. One say he was basically hit with an instrument, hit with something, trauma. So he got killed. It's a murder case. It's not suicide, what the sheriff said. So there's going to be an investigation. I think Eric Holder is looking into that. So the federal attorney is going into that now. It's going to be a big thing. Something happened that was very traumatic. Why would one autopsy say something else and the other one is totally saying something else? They're bringing the third one in now. So now it's going to be a different ball game. This young man got killed. And the sheriff is trying to make it. He's paddling around the boat. But the real thing is the second autopsy did not agree with the first autopsy. That was all in-house. That was all in-house. And they curved things. This young man got hit with something that killed him. The second autopsy, they said something happened dramatic and it was not suicide. Well, number one, I mean, if you kill yourself, how would you wrap yourself on a top or wrap yourself on a mat? How did that happen? So this is all crazy stuff here. And this is what they do. This is what they do. They're protecting someone or someone's in this murder case. Same with Incognito, the offensive tackle with the Miami Dolphins. They're trying to protect him as much as possible. This is a locker room type thing. This young man is a little bit different. When you get people that go to schools like Stanford and Harvard, they get MIT and become football players. They get treated a little bit different. They're not the same. It's an educational base. And good home, you know, mother and father together. You come from a good home. The parents are still married. They went to Harvard educated. So instead of some guy would probably punch him in his face, this guy didn't want to start no trouble. That would have been even more if you'd have punched him in his face. That would have been even more. Because they are double standards in football. They're double standards. They pay white players more than they pay white players. Average, you're not as good. They're being as good. But they pay them. They pay them anyhow. Most second-string quarterbacks make more money than the players who are playing every day active. It's a conspiracy in the sports. They need to make sure that they, again, are the head coaches. Most of them are assistant coaches when they finish. You don't get a job when you finish. You don't get a job. Care how good you are. You can't coach. Who can't coach? The coaches can't even play. So we're just too polite.
We'd like to alert our listening audience that We're going to be going over, and if you want to hear the entirety of this program, you go to www.blogtalkradio.com/African-. You type Missing Pages of History, and you can hear the show live, the remainder. Yes, Mr. Joyner, you can continue. I just wanted to make that announcement to our listening audience.
Yeah, I'm just saying when we look at the light to call out things, we fear, I don't know what we fear, but we fear too many things. But this case going to be solved. They have the same attorney and another attorney involved that's taking this young man's case when it had Trayvon Martin, the attorney there on top of this thing. And my question again, the two autopsy reports, how did he wrap himself inside of a mat himself and he killed himself? I mean, what did he kill himself with? There was nothing, no guns around, there's nothing around, so he killed himself. No bullet wounds, no this, no nothing. So something happened there. And back to the case of the Miami Dolphins, that's going to be a long-term case now because people, again, I see again how some of the people are talking. I'm like, how can you say this when this guy said this about your mama? You talk about my mama, you're going to have a problem right away. In the locker room, outside the locker room, in the street, you're going to have something. Because that's not going to happen. You talk about my mama. It's going to be a different ball game. You don't even know my mother. But he said everything you could think of, all the foul language you can talk about, he said it all. And some of the guys said, well, he should have punched him. Well, no. Warren Sapp said he should have punched him. But, you know, it's a different guy. You got a guy to go to Stanford. He's not going to be the same as a guy to go to, you know, other universities, basically, especially down south. You're in Florida. Florida, again, you stand your ground. You do almost anything you want to do in Florida. Your mouth don't have to be watched. But our mouth seem to be white. Well, we're afraid to say anything out of our mouth. But I'm not afraid to say anything out of my mouth. If you're racist, you're racist. And say what you are. It takes a coward not to say what you are. But call it the way you see it from the beginning and keep it there. You have to execute. Racism is being executed in all type of ways, especially at the local level.
Let me stop you right there. Let's get some feedback from Mikhail. Mikhail, what do you take from these two particular events that has been the mass media news recently as relates to the football case and the killing of the student in the school, being wraparound in a rug?
Well, the case with, I believe the young brother's name was Kendrick, that was found in the mattress rolled up, that remains to be seen exactly what happened there. It was disturbing to hear about the handling, how the body was handled at the funeral home. What I understand that the body was, they replaced his organs with newspaper, which is very unusual. We're wondering what that represents. And in terms of the football case, it speaks to a larger problem that we have as people here in this continent. The African-American people probably need a new paradigm completely. I've seen very many instances where the N-word is used by our people amongst each other. And in the presence of whites, for the most part, they're not usually allowed to use it, but that's even being compromised now. So the whole concept of who we are within this system is one of acquiescence and passivity and going along to get along. When you mentioned the European Jewish contingent of this society and worldwide, we look at the people who have taken the reins by the horns and are controlling their destiny by whatever means they have available. They're not dependent to the large extent that we are. We depend on the government. We depend on the state. We depend on others for employment, for the use of we just don't control our own destiny and have not really taken a hard look at how to do that. The examples are there, but we just haven't done it. So that's what I'd like to look at in the future. And even in terms of our own behavior, what can we do to improve self and kind, and to build for ourselves and away from this bowing down and going along and spending our money with folks who just don't really care.
Okay, I can ask y'all to make a statement or respond to this one question, and then we're going to do a summary and begin to close out. Emmanuel, there's an argument that because of the fact that African-American football players use the term, the N-word, to each other, and because they are in a have a special type of grouping relationship in the locker room, as long as you're on the same football team, whether you're African or European, they didn't see no problem with European using the N-word. I'd like to get your position. Under any conditions or under any situation, is it acceptable for anyone outside of the African race or the black race to use the N-word? What is your position on that?
Well, the N-word is not acceptable. No one should be using it, basically. It should be taken out of the dictionary totally, as far as I'm concerned. It's a Spanish word, anyhow. Don't even be changed until once we start saying that, I think people get some knowledge of where the N-word came from. And they say, well, which, you know, I'm not, you talking about Spanish people? I think once they start saying that, I think it'd be a different story then. But as far as I'm concerned, the N-word should never be used in any term anyway, because, again, it's a word of inferior to me. And, I mean, anybody call me the N-word, I don't care, you know, what pigmentation I call them back. It has no color, basically. It's a mixture. Spanish people are a mixture of Europeans and Africans, basically, is what they are. And when they say that, I just go right back and say, you know, that's what you know, what they are. So it takes one to call one. But for as far as I'm concerned, the N-word should be totally, I mean, no one should use it. I don't think it's okay in most locker rooms to say the N-word. But again, we said, also, you know, European Americans, they don't coin the word. They say it because they coined it. Then they got us saying it. Don't call them a Negro, you call them a nigger instead. Or that term got changed during slavery, and of course in the early 1900s. Then it went on from there, because that's the word. You see the signs. We don't make signs with those words on it. Europeans do. If you notice, on the election, some people use that word, or to use the word N-I-G-G-A. Well, what is that? But again, you know, we need to take a look at this and say, you know something? We got to make that a referendum that we don't need to use this word at any given time. Let's totally just kill it. Just kill the word totally, because it refers to anyone. But basically, the word came out of Spain. It's a Spanish term. So we got to find out exactly what it is first and where it came from. And what does it mean? So again, you know, before anybody went to Africa, this or that, Spanish people were the darkest people on the European continent. They were the darkest. Italians were second. They're the darkest people on the continent as far as having, you know, complexion or pigmentation. So those are the terms they use for these people. So we got to learn our history. I said that's where it came from. So when someone say that word to you, say, oh, I'm not Spanish, then they'll wake up. We need to wake some people up again. Again, we're being too polite.
Mikhail, what is your take on this question? Is it under any condition acceptable for a European to use that word towards another African-American person?
Well, when we grew up, it was a fighting word. However, I will state this. I grew up in the 60s. And in going to school in Harlem at that time, the black word black was a fighting word. You could use the N-word, Negro, colored, all that we accepted. My father was from the West Indies, and he didn't accept those terms. His definition of who he was very different than what we have over here. As to the etymology and the source of that word, it came into Spain through the Latin, and from the Hebrew. And if you look in the Bible, there's a individual called Shimon or Simon. I believe he's in the New Testament, and he was called Simon the Black or Simon the Niger. And this is where you get Nigeria, the Niger River. It's referring something, but it, at that point in time, it was a description as just you may describe this as a white guy or a black guy if without using those particular terms in that particular language. The problem now is that as of our entrance into this country in the 1500s and after that, we were labeled with that word, and the word was redefined to be a type of a character statement, a statement of inferiority, and I don't believe we should even use that word, not until we really realized who we were and how we became what we are today.
Okay, in closing, can I get a brief, and I mean a brief, one-minute statement, a closing summary on the theme and topic of what's going on in the neck of your woods in the world, starting with you first, Mikhail, and then we end with Emmanuel.
Well, what's going on in my neck of the woods is the same old, same old. So, again, we need to get back to some real basics in looking at who we are, who we were, and how we can reclaim it, whatever past glory. We got a lot of folks out there who talk about how we built the pyramids and did so on and so forth. Well, if we did that, then we need to reclaim that and move forward.
Emmanuel, close the statement, please.
Yeah, like Mikhail was saying, we need to build the pyramids again. We need to build the pyramids in education, build the pyramids in employment. We need to build the pyramids in our community. We need to stop being so polite. We have to basically go against the negatives that they're talking about us and make sure, because we are a superior race, and we have to keep the superiority up. Now, we know the opportunity is not the same as for everyone else, because, again, they made sure that with a Lynch letter, they made sure that, and that is their preamble. That is what they pledge allegiance to. Is that particular letter, the Willie Lynch letter, and that's what they're doing. If you look at the letter and you look at what they're doing, it's the same. Nothing is different. Racism has raised its ugly head again and more prominent than ever because we have an African-American president.
Okay, in closing, we'd like to thank our listening audience and our supporters for allowing us to come to their home this evening and share our perspectives on what's going on in the neck of the woods. We'd like to inform everybody that this is a bi-weekly show that comes on every Saturday at 12 noon, bi-weekly. Our next program will be November the 23rd. And we'd like to continue this topic, and we'd like to have your point of view on what's going on in your necks or your woods. But more particularly, we want to address the issue, what we need to fix among ourselves, okay, as relates to our people and our community. We want to talk about what we need to fix among ourselves. Let's do a critique of ourselves, so we can talk shop. And until next time, we'd like to remind you, thank you for listening to Mr. Page of History. You can always contact us at Mr. Page of History 1@yahoo.com, or you can mail us any views or comments you have. You can mail us to P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, zip code 23261. Any support or contribution you'd like to send to us, feel free. It's welcome. Because remember, we are trying to use communication as a tool to build our communities. Until next time, let's continue to fill in our missing pages of history. As your host, Lee Robinson, we thank you for your opportunity, to come to your home again today. Thank you. And y'all have a great and blessed weekend. Bye-bye.